it's so important as someone who owns their influence that you decide what you stand for, because that is your influence, and then you actually have a willingness to share that message and to be as bold as to say, unashamedly, stand for something and have the willingness to engage people in moving to a higher level of consciousness, you know, moving outside of that third order.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, where we help natural health practitioners and wellness experts build profitable, predictable, and enjoyable practices. Each week, we share simple, effective, easily actionable, and proven heart-centered marketing strategies. And now your hosts, Dr. Angus Pike and Dr. Tony Rose.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Your Practice podcast. Tony and Angus here. We've just had a chat with Kerry Bradshaw from Believe Coaching and Training. A great chat all around this concept of going from practitioner to leader. So if you're someone who wants to step up in roles and really being a leader, or as what Angus and I refer to as a community influencer, then this episode really is for you. And we go into concepts of self-esteem, self-compassion, looking at gratitude, looking at our headspace around leadership, or even success for that matter, in what it takes to be a community influencer. You're going to love it. You know, this concept, well, your favourite was Not Yet.
Not Yet. As all these ideas are coming towards us, FOMO from fear of missing out there too.
But inundated.
Yeah. I'll tell you why I think this is so important too, gang, for you guys that are, and gals that are listening out there or watching us, is that our degrees train us to be great technicians. Mm. You know, whether it be a chiropractor, Chinese med, naturopath, we're great at that. But what comes along with that is running a business for many of us too, employing staff, stepping into this idea of how do I make it all kind of happen for that. And for so many of us, that doesn't come naturally. In fact, for very few people does it come naturally. It's a real skill set as well. So that journey from practitioner all the way into leader is one that I think is essential for most of us to get the most out of our practice, our lives as well.
So I think the other one is that a lot of people then think, well, what do I need to do? You know, what's the to-do list in order to get those skill sets? And it's a really interesting chat because it's more about the mindset.
Who do I need to be?
Who do I need to be?
Yeah.
Which will obviously then determine what you do. So great chat. Let's not muck around anymore. Let's get in and have a listen to Kerry Bradshaw. Well, Kerry Bradshaw, welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast. So lovely to see you.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this very special podcast that I'm sure helps many.
Well, absolutely, that's the key.
That's the game, and it's growing like gangbusters too, which brings a warmth to Tony and my heart too. You know, our passion is to help, you know, natural health practitioners make a difference to the world, and we're excited to kind of talk with you about some great things today too. Before we get into that, for those of our listeners that haven't had the pleasure of knowing you, of being a part of you, give us a background story of Kerry.
Sure. So Kerry's story begins way back when I was lucky enough that one of my older sisters introduced the family to chiropractic through connection, and then another sister stepped into chiropractic as a result. And so that all started back when I was about 14. And so the involvement of my heart space into chiropractic all started back there from a family perspective, and then has developed into a keen interest, and beyond that to my own sense of purpose in how I can serve the profession of chiropractic, but expanding that out to any profession that is social mission aligned. Mm. So the joy of being of service, my professional journey has always been in the service industry, and taking the experiences of all the service industries that I've been a part of and now applying it within my own business, which is Believe Coaching and Training, has evolved over, you know, the last 5 years specifically to Believe Coaching and Training, but over a lifetime of being of service and being immersed in a world of service when it comes to chiropractic and other allied health supporting professions.
Mm, beautiful journey. And you know, some of your, or a lot of your training has a real synergy with what Angus and I often are talking to practitioners about all the time. This struggle we're taught, you know, as chiropractors, as naturopaths, Chinese med, whatever it is, how to do our thing, you know, to do the doing. Yet coming with practice is this whole other concept of being a business owner, being a employer, being a leader, being a teacher, all these other things that we're not necessarily taught at uni. And I certainly did in my first practice, struggled with putting my practitioner hat off and then putting my business owner hat on and my employer hat on and my boss, all that sort of stuff. So really looking forward to having a chat about this concept of going from practitioner to leader and in what we term a community influencer. So I really want to dive into that, Kerry, because we see it being, and again, you talk to this concept of certainty really wrapping around that journey from practitioner to leader as well. So let's begin with that as a framework. What is this concept of going from practitioner to leader?
Sure. Thanks for that intro. And it's a really good starting point because it follows on from your podcast number 25 with Russ Rosen, who really lights up a room, doesn't he? He's so much fun.
Yeah.
So that hour of review that I did prior to this was really helpful because it linked some key threads there of the connection between leadership and certainty. And I can see that ADIO already have that representation in their modelling and how they choose to influence the allied health profession. And it's fascinating as I journey through building material through the research that I've done and case studies I've experienced, and then to actually hear people like Russ talk my language that I felt I'd certainly put the Believe coaching and training flavour to because I've developed it. But we know there's so many best ways of how to move forward and how to influence, and to have people like Russ and Robert Keegan and his adult developmental science studies and theories all aligned with what I'm training and what I've developed as resources is really exciting. And I'm stumbling more and more over these high profile people that are doing it globally while I'm thinking and acting locally. And that's the exciting thing for me because I'm such a small fish in a big pond, but it's so nice to know that I'm somewhat aligned and swimming the same direction as all the big fish out there. And that was what was exciting for me with hearing Russ's two pillars, and his number one was certainty. And that was where you linked, Angus, the importance of certainty and leadership actually being hand in hand. And Russ talked about the why of what we do is our certainty, and then the how is what we do of what we do is how we communicate that. And his superpower is in the neuroscience of communication. And it's so important as someone who owns their influence that you decide what you stand for, because that is your influence, and then you actually have a willingness to share that message and to be as bold as to say unashamedly stand for something and have the willingness to engage people in moving to a higher level of consciousness, you know, moving outside of that third order that Robert Keegan talks about and moving into the fourth order of where you really aligned to not just a tribe, but aligned to this thing called personal values and personal vision and a personal philosophy of what you stand for and then how you communicate that. Because there's no use of that being a secret. It's, you know, when I was in real estate many moons ago, which I loved, beautiful service industry, my director used to say, you can't sell a secret. You need a signboard. You need to advertise. Don't save money because it's not going to sell your property. You can't sell a secret. And so our influence is the same. We can stand for something, but if we don't talk about it, if we don't have passion that drives how we talk about it, it's a secret.
Kerry, can you give us some examples? Or first of all, what are some of the challenges that the people that you work with, because you work, as you said, on the ground, helping people to articulate what they stand for? What are some of the challenges that people have around that? And then could you give us some kind of examples of some outcomes that people get to, sort of things they could stand for? So, you know, we've got our listeners are thinking, okay, where am I possibly heading towards? Where should my thought processes be? And what are some of the possible hurdles I might have along the way?
Three great questions. So we'll start with the first one. What are the challenges that I experience? And this is a beautiful conversation I have with Tony, actually. And we both identified this esoteric or intangible that can be the root cause of so much doubt, which we can call as the opposing polarity of certainty. And it's self-worth. Primarily, the beautiful clients that I attract are those that are so passionate and so connected to wanting to be of influence, and what is holding them back is their self-belief. My company being Believe Coaching and Training, it's no accident that I'm not quite sure why I came up with Believe as my brand, but at the same time very sure in that that's actually what I sell. I sell self-belief and I sell empowerment. And as a coach, as a consultant, and as a trainer, it's my responsibility to empower others with their self-belief and their certainty as a leader. So the greatest challenge being self-worth or self-belief, and it's not that they don't have it, it's they don't have the mechanisms and the principles to nourish it enough to deliver what they're driven to deliver in the sense of being a community influencer. And so we work on principles and we work on nourishment to ensure that they're robust leaders. And that's what my program is framed around, being a robust leader that incorporates the mindset of a leader, the certainty of a leader, and the principles that underpin everything that we do. So we have imperishable resilience as a leader. And the imperishable resilience is the most important aspect of what I train. But of course, you have to start with leader certainty, anchor that in. Move to the Be Real leadership principles, anchor that in. And that's the mechanics and dynamics of how you deliver best practice and how you deliver your influence. Anchor in an influence statement, why you choose to influence, and that becomes your affirmation. And then move to how do we make this imperishable? How do we make it bulletproof? And the training arm of what I've developed and launched in July this year has enabled me to train all those things in a group environment alongside of the coaching that I do one-on-one. And what I can deliver and achieve for individuals within that training room is heightened and fast-tracked compared to what I can deliver on those principles one-on-one as a coach. So, you know, the coach's responsibility is to be the bound that supports the grafting, but the grafting is something that is typically chosen by the client because the client knows themselves the best, and they're the ones that think about their success, their challenges, and what they need to be the ultimate version of themselves. They know that intimately. So as a coach, you go fishing. If you're lucky, you catch a marlin, and there often is the struggle of a marlin. But once you actually are able to pull that in, it's so rewarding for the individual. And we laugh a lot because they'll talk about how often they've stuffed that marlin back down for whatever reason. But it's then taking, taking that gold that I've pulled from their self-conscious, that's not fresh and it's not new, it's just quite dusty and been in a box somewhere in the back corner of their mind, and then using that to graft into what they're already doing, layer principles, which is the bounds that I do with the grafting, and enable then that to flourish and be a part of, you know, their strength moving forward as a leader and most importantly as that community influencer that you speak of.
Kerry, are there things, if I'm listening to this at the moment, that I'm realizing that my self-esteem is a little bruised and battered, or my self-worth moving forwards, I like that word that you talked about, nourishing. Are there some things that we can give to our audience now to start to help them to nourish that self, to start to fertilize that so they can kind of get a better understanding of what's inside of them to move forwards?
Sure, great question. So, if I look at the Vicky Kelly version of the world, who's been one of my greatest mentors of heart space and self-compassion, and then I team it with Robert Keegan and his adult developmental theories, we know that the socialising mind is where we're sitting in that tribe space and wanting to be a sense of belonging to something perhaps bigger than ourselves. And so that's called the third order. And the third order is the external way in which we measure ourselves. And we could call that self-esteem. Self-esteem relies on us comparing ourselves against someone else. And this is how Vicky Kelly has described it to me. Now, she obviously is immersed in social sciences and does all the research, and I'm so blessed because then I just get the gold and I don't have to do the digging and the prospecting to find it. Hmm. That's the value of having the right people around you, and no doubt that's the value of ADIO to your listeners. You present the gold, you've done the digging and the prospecting. So Vicky would communicate about the importance of self-compassion as opposed to self-esteem. And now the science behind that, when I look at Robert Keegan's work, he talks about the third order and the fourth order, and I see that, and it's just my personal view as I process it through my own filters, that self-esteem exists when you're in the third order and self-compassion exists as you move up to the fourth order, and you have a greater identity of your values, your vision, your mission, and the philosophy of which you live by, and then share. So the key take home that I would love for anyone listening to this podcast is remembering the kindness of self-compassion opposed to the harsh judgment of self-esteem. But in saying that, self-esteem enables us to measure ourselves against the world and our environment, and then step back up into the fourth order and use that to build our views and our vision and our mission and what our purpose is as a leader, and to layer in the certainty needed. And whenever we experience self-worth challenge, we could almost own the fact that we're looking square in the eye of the third order, square in the eye of self-esteem. And what we really need to be looking at is behind us. So take that pause, pivot 180 degrees, and through a compassionate space, look at ourselves from a self-compassion perspective. And, you know, self-compassion, as long as it's teamed with a couple of other things, being that you keep the passion and drive, it's not about making excuses for yourself, but it's certainly about making up the stories in your head, because that's all thoughts are. We make them up. Using those thoughts to propel our self-worth using self-compassion, less self-esteem. Because it's a self-esteem, I believe, that puts us in a much more judging place, because we're externalizing our value. When we're in self-compassion, we're internalizing our value, and we're comparing against our values and those intentions and goals that we have set for ourselves.
Can you give us an example of what a self-compassion dialogue would be like, what I would say, versus a self-esteem dialogue? What might be some of the conversations that I would have, and how do I reframe it out of that as well?
Well, the reason I giggle and say wow is connected to my own journey, and I giggle with self-compassion and lightness about how long it took me to connect outside of self-esteem and into self-compassion. A life as a performer and a weekend athlete, you know, who's my journey has always been about a steely competitor, white line fever, a weekend warrior, and that was how I managed my self-esteem as a younger person. And thankfully I had two things in my life. I had horse riding and tennis at high levels, and when one was going not so great, the other one typically was going great. So I actually needed both of them at high levels to exist in a place of confidence. And it was in reflection, it's really interesting to observe that and to know how reliant I was on those for my self-worth. And moving to the self-compassion, the story is really simple. I just walked my property, and at every opportunity I said, I am a good and worthy person. And to stomach that, I would cry and cry around my property, because somehow I just didn't believe that I was a good and worthy person. And that was gifted to me possibly by my sister. I actually can't remember, being Vicky Kelly. Actually, no. Now I think about it, it was a beautiful lady called Raylene King, who I worked with at in the recruiting world. And I'm pretty sure it was Raylene who shared that joy with me. And so I walked with that, and she's a Reiki healer. Mm. And so I walked with that for months. And every time I caught myself judging myself and externalizing my value, I pulled myself back to self-compassion. At the time, I didn't know I was doing this. The joy of, the more research and reading and reviews that you do, the more you are able to reflect on the value that the little things that you did. I am a good and worthy person is the key dialogue, I feel, the bridge that takes you from self-esteem to self-compassion. There's a whole range of ways that you can do it, but that's certainly one route that you can take. And just owning the lightness, that's really important in how we see our world and also see ourselves.
Excellent. Well put, Kerry. Here's my challenge. We can have this outlook of saying I am worthy and have this self-compassion, yet I can still be doing wrong things that don't lead me in the right direction or lead to the outcome that I actually want as this worthy, self-compassionate human being that I have. I'm on this mission, but if I'm doing the wrong shit, I'm going to get the wrong results. How do we make sure that we actually then align with this new vision of ourselves or new found self-compassion with the right things?
I love that question. So many answers come to mind, and so I'm just pulling the easiest way to communicate that. I touched on goals and intentions earlier, and I teamed that with what we were talking about around certainty and leadership. And I teamed I am a good and worthy person with gratitude writing every day, and then Demartini's model of the 10 daily intentions. And the best resource that I can direct people to read or reread, because it might have been 10 years ago when the book was released that you last read this book, is Dr. John Demartini's The Gratitude Effect. And The Gratitude Effect talks about the importance of daily gratitudes, and we also get a real insight to Demartini's life from a young man right through to the successful influencer that he is now. And then the instruments of which he used to get to where he is now, which is through gratitude and a whole range of other things. Obviously, it's not dimensional. And so if we're able to team the healthy affirmation chats that we have in our own mind with maintaining lightness and then setting goals and intentions for ourselves that are behavioural based, that's the trick with goals. Is if we set goals, yes, the SMART goal is a good way of doing it because we know the acronym of SMART when we're setting goals. But if we can actually just set it around what Russ talks about, which is know who you are and have that certainty around that, the way that I identified who I am and own my influence is that 10 daily intentions, once I got clear about what my purpose and philosophy of influence is, then just write about it. And that's what I feel has, on a quantum level, supported my journey and enabled me to really connect to my intuitive self, because I'm so clear and certain on who I need to show up as every day. And of course, I fail often, which is exciting because that's the measurement of the journey. It's how long have you fallen away from the true version of yourself, and then how long does it take for you to get back there? And so, for example, it could have been last week and I was in a funk for 2 days, or it was 3 months ago and I was out of it within 2 hours. And that's how I measure through mistakes and errors. It's the time and time between, and then for how long, that's the measurement of success for me, and how much closer I'm getting to the real version of the best version of me. So the importance of teaming those, the Demartini model, the daily intentions and the gratitudes, gets you really close to what you truly want. It also communicates on a quantum level what you're wanting to move towards. So the universe is able to drop those in and you're more aware to actually notice them because you've written about them that day.
I'm reading at the moment Brené Brown's new book, Daring Leadership. And she has this interesting thing, because I think about the way you described that before, that when we have these hurdles or muck-ups, whatever you want to call them, she says often what happens is we go into shame, which says, I'm a bad person, versus what my understanding of what self-compassion might look like is, I did a bad thing. And so, you know, an even more possibly sociopathic way would be go, oh, I didn't do anything wrong. So I don't think, for me, when I think about the solution for that is not, you know, this self-esteem side of thing, or that third, I forget the language that you talked about,
third order.
Is stuck in that, you know, that real shame there versus, okay, I did a bad thing. Because I think we're always going to get feedback. The universe is going to give us feedback in terms of, oh yeah, look, I might think I'm doing great things, but I'm not getting the result. So I'm not getting the result. And then I've got two options. One, I'm either a bad person, or two, my strategies aren't kind of working from there too. And I, as I was listening to Kerry through that too, that's my understanding of the difference between sort of self-esteem possibly getting stuck and self-compassion kind of getting stuck inside there as well. I want to hear more about these intentions and stuff like that as well. When you're personally with those, or you're working with people with those too, those intentions, are they, how do they differ from goals? You know, how could I implement those into there? Or are they like mini daily goals? Do they change each day? How do we work with those?
Thanks, Angus. For me, it's about keeping things agile and not anchoring into rituals, because I feel as though rituals can be rigid, and this is just my personal view. So the importance is to maintain a sense of flow, and that flow is downstream, you know, knowing that everything that you need is downstream. That's the Esther and Terry Hicks version of the astonishing world of emotions, you know. It's understanding that if you're swimming upstream, and I know for chiropractic there's been an incredible, you know, upstream for the profession and for those that are driving the profession. So please understand I'm not being disrespectful to the hard work that the chiropractic profession specifically has had to do to maintain its influence and certainty around its philosophy. What I train is knowing that sense of knowing that, you know, the dimension of which we live in, there is meant to be challenge, but within those challenges are the gifts that still help us go downstream. So you talk about the intentions, and you want to know more about the intentions. The key filter that those intentions happen, or goals happen through, is the leader mindset, or the robust mindset, which I train. So over time, and certainly in the last 12 months, I've been able to define a principle around the mindset that I share with my clients, whether it's in the training room, consulting, or coaching, and that is the OSG mindset, I call it, which is about optimism, self-regulation, and generosity of spirit. And what I attract tends to be those beautiful people that are highly optimistic and passionate and driven, sometimes at the expense of reality. So they've optimized through blind optimism at times.
Yes.
So it's helping them regulate and reality test their optimism, and giving them tools for themselves to be able to regulate their reality tested optimism. Then they're fabulous at the generosity of spirit. By nature, they're givers, they're sharers, sometimes fixers, so we manage the fixing. But we'll, you know, when we're in the heart space, that's something that is a constant that we have to then step into the self-regulation. And that's the importance of the mindset that I've found to be the most effective for myself, of which now I coach and train with others. So the self-regulation is the key, and the intention setting and the behavioural goal setting falls under that self-regulation element of the mindset training that we do. So it's wonderful when I have clients, typically attracting clients, that are very anchored in their optimism and their generosity of spirit, because so much of the hard work's already done. And if I do have clients that come to me that need work in those two areas, I'll actually refer them off, because they tend to want to get into their story and their past, and they've got some healing to do through counselling and other practitioners that sit alongside what I do. As a coach, you're now in the future, and there's some work to be done if you're still in that space of pain and can't live in the optimism column and the generosity of spirit column. So intention setting it really starts with vision and mission, and that's your first two key intentions. And if you're not clear on your personal vision and mission, then all the other intentions don't seem to have a home. And we can get busy with setting our vision and mission for our companies as directors. What we haven't done is perhaps spent enough time about what our personal vision and our personal mission is. And so inside my intentions book, where I do my 10 daily intentions, and this again goes back to DeMartini's model, he talks of the importance of setting your vision and your purpose, and then your 10 intentions daily is how are my actions today going to move me towards that vision and purpose? So it could be, I am enough. Mm-hmm. As simple as that. That's one intention. It could be, I'm a good and worthy person. It's basically you're creating affirmations for yourself that's going to move you closer to living the best version of you. What is the measure of the best version of you? It's the vision and mission and purpose that you've created, and that becomes your daily measure of how you're showing up as a 10 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10 or a 2 out of 10. And then we cycle back to what we were talking about with Brené Brown and the shame. And I look at that optimism element of mindset, and I train my clients and myself that it's really important to look at every failure, every challenge, everything that we would judge as wrong, and we swim around long enough in the shit of it to find the gift. Because sometimes we can actually jump out of the shit because it feels so disgusting to be in and so shameful to be swimming in the shit that we've actually missed the whole point of why we're in the shit in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so swim around, be curious to it, walk with it. And this is, again, the fourth order. You know, it's about stepping up and be constructively reflecting and be immersed in that sense of vulnerability and uncertainty enough to actually find the gift in it. And that's what I use my gratitudes for. At times I'll write and I'll write and I'll write, and it could be ranty, it could be judgy, angry, you know, it could be about the external world or my internal self, but I keep writing until I find the gift. And so often I just laugh at the end, and it might be 3 pages long. But finally I found the gift. And I feel as though when we make mistakes and when we are faced with challenges, that again is a take home that I want anyone who's listening to this to take on board, that allow yourself to feel that uncertainty, the vulnerability, and even the shame, if that's what it is, long enough, and write about it to make sure that you've actually picked up the gift that was wrapped up beautifully in a big bow, if you swam long enough in that environment of what could be a bit stenchy and a bit uncomfortable.
I think we just got the podcast episode title, how to swim in shit long enough. But I get that, Kerry, thank you. And you know, so maybe that's a quality of someone who is this leader who we're trying to aspire to, and you know, not just practitioner but leader. What are some of the other tangible qualities that, you know, someone's listening, people listening going, yes, I want to be a leader. I want to be able to do all these things. What are the qualities that these people have? The success people, people who are killing it in all the things that you teach. Who are they?
So Napoleon Hill has his list, I think, of 12. If you haven't read Think and Grow Rich, buy it. It is phenomenal. And it takes us on a journey of, and I've pulled six key elements of his 12. I can't recommend highly enough that book. And it comes teamed, actually, I've got one on the shelf there. Where is it? It comes teamed with a workbook now, because Napoleon Hill wrote that from memory back in the 40s, and it was through the Industrial Revolution, of which he did 25 years of research of the top 500, I think it was, successful people, interviewed them all, and then over the course of 20 odd years made decisions about what are the principles that are the foundation elements of these successful people within the Industrial Revolution. And so the number one thing that he talks about is burning desire, and then persistence. And I see those two things as the two leading areas. And what I find is practitioners who then decide to step up and step away from being a technician and step up to be a leader of a practice, they have a burning desire. And so they just need to team that burning desire with the persistence and then the specialised knowledge. And again, specialised knowledge is a term of Napoleon Hill and one of his key elements. So if we look at those three elements and know the quality of those three elements right back from 1925, from the Industrial Revolution, you know, through to when he released his book, it is a fascinating journey. And again, another principle, a pack of principles that can help us understand our best way, because all we are as individuals is a whole range of other people's best ways, of which we take in and use what we, parts of it, all of it, to continue to feed our leader certainty and nourish our leader certainty to make sure that we can be the best version of ourselves every day.
Mm, nice. Why, Kerry, why should somebody make the journey from practitioner through to leader? Is it for everybody? Are there some practitioners that just shouldn't do it?
Very good question, Angus. I don't feel as though I'm the right person to answer it. However, I'll give it a crack. I feel life's about timing, and at where I am in life, certainly it's a very different place than where I was at 35. And I feel as though the journey's for everybody. It's just the timing of that journey. And I would love everyone who's listening to really pause long enough to think about that it's not about it's not for me. It's as Vicky trains me, it's a not yet, it's not a no.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a fascinating journey that I've had, because as a trainer now, there was a lot of not yet years that were in between me moving into being a trainer. And when I was very young, I wanted to be a teacher, a PE teacher. and over the years, I've always known that for me to be able to share and empower others was really important for me, but I just didn't know how that was going to be. So I think it's about identifying what is that burning desire, because that's what it was for me way back when. Then find the lot in the lot that fits how you deliver that. And it's taken me time and, as I said, not yet years to get to a stage where I now stand in front of people and am able and willing and capable to train. So it's about that sense of persistence alongside the burning desire. As a practitioner, just embrace, if you're not stepping up and being the leader of a group as a director, be a willing neck that holds up the head. So what I mean by that is the two I see. If people like yourselves who own practices have incredible two ICs, it really enables so much more influence in our community, because there's that stability and strength within the team. You know, the neck is so important for the stability of the head, and it also, you know, affects the lower lumbar region of the spine if it's not strong and stable. So spoken as a chiropractic client rather than a chiropractor there. And so that's what I see as most important for any practitioner, wherever they stand within their profession. There's, you know, there's a number of allied health practitioners that will be listening to this for sure, alongside of, you know, who knows, it might go to any social mission service industry. The importance is be the best 2IC that you can be to the influencer that you've chosen to align yourself to, and then live the not yet model. You just don't know. Persist, have a clear burning desire of what that looks like, and everything's possible.
Yeah, I think it's also just going with that, you know, swimming with your shit long enough. Sometimes people haven't swum in it long enough. Maybe the pit hasn't been bad enough for them to take action, or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe they haven't found that inspiration or motivation or mentor, or had the right people around them to actually lift them up, you know, tide rising, raising all boats sort of scenario. But interesting stuff. Now, Kerry, you've mentioned your trainings with Believe Coaching. Lots over the interview. What have you got? Where can people go to learn a little bit more about your coaching?
Sure. So believecoachingandtraining.com.au is where you can find out a whole range of different things about what we do. Within there, it's a coaching portal in itself, because I see what I train from, what I coach or consult with, as four elements. So you've got the systems, the strategy, the culture, and the growth. And I know you gentlemen talk a lot about the leaky bucket and the importance with marketing to make sure that that bucket base is imperishable. And so within the website, there's a lot of questions, because as a coach, that's my role. It's to ask better questions, and typically you have the answers. And together we explore those answers and turn them into goals and intentions. So as a starting point, get in there, have a look, look at the questions, and use it as a coaching process for yourself without even needing to touch in with me, and get the benefit from those questions that are already in there. And then under the events section, that's where all the training sessions sit. And so the next 6 months calendar is up. And you're welcome to also just make a general inquiry, and I'd be more than happy to have a chat, answer any questions in regards to the overwhelm of where do I start.
Mm. I mean, nice. We've had the pleasure of, you know, some great friends of ours you've personally worked with and helped them in this process. And the results have been extraordinary. They rave about the work that you do with them, Kerry. And I think, you know, I love this. It fits this philosophy that we have as, allied health people, which tends to be, a model that's organic, that's holistic, that's, you know, mission-driven, service-based, that we kind of talked about before, social service-based there too. So I love your work here too. For me, it's very cerebral. I get excited about it too. I love the not yet. It's one of my biggest takeaways from today, is this concept of, as ideas are coming to me, there's a freedom for me to be able to go, love that, but not yet, which may take some of the things off my plate, because I don't like saying no to things. So that might help me with some not yets as well. So behalf of Tony and myself, Kerry, we want to really just thank and acknowledge you for what you do. I've been beyond impressed with our interactions leading up until now. I'm excited about you continuing to share more and more of your stuff out with, you know, our tribe as it comes in the future there too. So any final words that you would like to share with our wonderful audience in parting today, Kerry?
How amazing of you to pick that up. Thank you so much, because I have a doozy that I'd like to share.
Great.
And it's about the not yet. And because I'm all about principles to empower, what I've done to empower myself with my not yet is I have a third element. So you talk about, tell me more about these intentions. And you asked that question 40 minutes ago. So there's the gratitude process. The gratitude process then leads me into my 10 daily intentions. Could you imagine how connected you are to your purpose once you've done that in a morning? And so often, and I do this often on a Saturday morning, sitting outside in the sun in my favourite spot on the veranda, and then I have an ideas book. And so often the gold that comes once I get to my, even halfway through a gratitude, it might have been halfway through my intentions. And so I dump my ideas into this ideas book, and it's a visual communication book, so blank pages, and I just go nuts and I just write. And so when I came to content creation for my training, I just went back to my ideas books and was able to pull together everything in one day for the first training, simply because I had it all written down over the course of 2 years. Now, I've paid this same gift forward to a number of my clients, because by nature, with our burning desire, we have specialized knowledge. We also have imagination that we bring to that. So we are unleashing our imagination every time we write those intentions. And if we don't write them down and put them in a resource that we can refer to later, they just swim around and take up a lot of headspace and actually turn into distractions. So that's a really important final step. And it enables the not yet to still live on and have a golden thread and a bit of a heartbeat that sits within your ideas book. So that's my gift to you with Vicky Kelly's golden not yet, teamed with Kerry Bradshaw's ideas book. And buy something with lots of pages, because you'll be very surprised at how often that you're entering into it.
Beautiful.
And that's it for me.
Well done. Kerry Bradshaw, thanks so much for being part of the Marketing Your Practice podcast. We love and appreciate you, and look forward to next time. So gang, check out the notes, check out the links. There'll be some links down below also with some notes of the books that were mentioned. So grab those and get around it. Believe coaching. So thanks, Kerry. We'll catch up next time.
Thank you so much. You have a beautiful day.
You too. See you.
Awesome.
Well done. Woohoo! Well done. Can you just come out for the dancing? That's the
right.
The capable.